Welcome to IKP's Digital Film Podcast, where we literally discuss everything and anything in the digital film world, and even some analog stuff. I mean, we may cover Betamax all the way to 4K, Hi8 tapes, VHS tapes, the history of DVD, HD DVD, and Blu-ray format war, TVs, CRTs, floppy disks, 8-track tapes. Who knows? I'm fucking jumping all over the place here. But yeah, that's what you'll get here at the IKP's Digital Film Podcast. You might learn something. You might not. You might laugh till you shit your pants. Who knows? But for the next 45 minutes to an hour, we'll try and give you at least some digital film entertainment. So kick back, relax, and enjoy our sexy digital film podcast. Yeah. Welcome to IKP's Digital Film Podcast. Again, here we are, or here I am, again, talking to you, talking to your sexy ears, hopefully entertaining you, if you will. All right, so what's the discussion today? Well, what do I got to say today? I actually recently purchased Kick-Ass. Sure you guys are familiar with them, and some of you I'm sure you guys are familiar. So that's a interesting movie. I haven't seen it I think the last time I saw it was when it first came out on Blu-ray, which a couple years ago. And I went to Best Buy and I saw it on sale, and it was, you know, $7.99, man. Like, you know, I was thinking the other day, I was like fucking walking the aisles of Best Buy, you know, the fucking Blu-ray aisles, and mixed in with some DVDs, which I think is atrocious. But yeah, I was walking, I was looking at some of these prices, man. $12.99 for some Blu-rays, seven as low as $5.99 in some cases. But yeah, I was able to buy this movie, which, you know, I think comes in a 3-disc set, and it just astounded me how far we've come in terms of the acquisition of and distribution of HD content has become so affordable. I remember when Blu-rays were like fucking, almost all Blu-rays were upwards to 40 bucks. I dare say 50 for some when they first came out. And the Blu-ray players, really expensive, $400 or $500. Up there, you know, now you can pick up a Blu-ray player for like $59 to $100, you know, for a good one. You probably might want to spend a little bit more, but as you know, as I told you in the last podcast, I found out that all Blu-ray players are not made equal. So you essentially, you know, with age and sometimes you get ultimately what I want to say is you do get what you pay for. So in some cases, so there are exceptions. Sometimes you get a bargain and bam, boom, it's like a gem in the fucking sand and shit. But yeah, so I picked up Kick-Ass due to the fact that, you know, the sequel's coming out, I think next year. Fucking, I'm not sure. I'm fine. Sorry. I'm 2 hours running off 2 hours of sleep here, but yeah, I watched it and I was like, I was fucking jazzed. It was especially with the hit girl stuff. You know, I don't like Nicolas Cage's acting. You know, I'm very like, I think I could literally count on my fingers like the Nicolas Cage movies that I like, which would be maybe Face Off. I'm still like, I was a big fan of it, but more so for Travolta. But you know, I thought Cage did okay, a little over the top, but you know that he's gonna kind of play it that way. Definitely loved Gone in 60 Seconds. I love car movies. You know, I'm you know, we're the type of family that, you know, likes stuff like Memento, you know, a real fucking film, and then we like popcorn shit, like, you know, the Avengers, and then we like the occasional crap that you just fucking turn off your brain and just watch shit blow up, like the fucking Expendables or all the Resident Evil movies. And to a certain extent, we my wife loves Sherry loves car movies, and so Gone in 60 Seconds, and not the original one, but the fucking Jolie and Cage remake. I suggest watch the original one too, but Fast and Furious, man, all Fast, except the second one. I think the second one had a little bit of weak sauce, but it was. Anyway, I'm kind of drifting off here, but anyway, so I watched Kick-Ass, and I was like looking at the Hit Girl stuff and how they handled it and whatnot, and I was thinking to myself, you know what? Take that fucking concept, you know, fucking little kid, fucking kicking adults' asses. Not only kicking asses, but fucking just shooting them and killing them and just badass. This kid. And it works in this world. You know, it's a little fantastical. You gotta stretch your imagination. It's Hollywood. So you gotta kind of, okay, I'll bite. If this is the world you created, you know, I'll bite. Yeah, every movie's trying to be so realistic nowadays. Like, you know, if we're gonna make a Batman movie, we have to ground it in some sort of reality. And I think that that's kind of good. Because it lends itself to a formula that you know you kind of believe in, you're more invested in it. But at the same time, if you ground things like Batman into too much reality, you try to ground it in too much reality. What happens is the side effect is you end up throwing away a lot of good stuff. A lot of Batman has a great rogues gallery of villains and. These villains have certain abilities and certain things that people would love to see. I mean, you play the Arkham Asylum game or some of the stuff that I've seen from Injustice, Gods Among Us video game. You know, you bring some of those shit, you know, the iconic Batman stuff that you read in the comic books, the villains and the gadgetry and, you know, this is all leading up to Kick-Ass kind of inner ties, and I'll let you know why, but... You know, you have to be a little bit fantastical. Yeah, try and ground it in as much reality as possible, but you have to take liberties in terms to really satisfy. I still have yet to see the quintessential Batman movie that represents essentially when I played Arkham City for Xbox. Yeah, I'm not a fucking gamer, but you know, I played that fucking game, and you know. Everything that is Batman that you would expect, not only from the costume to the costumes of the villains and the digital representations of his rogues gallery and Arkham City and Alfred and everything, it just screams like that needs to be plastered in all over the fucking screen. Now, I love Nolan's fucking amazing, and he did a great job. Although Rises was, you know, kind of almost fell under its own weight because, you know, he did such a good job with The Dark Knight, you know, with Heath Ledger. And I mean, fucking, you know, it was a little bit hard to top in that. So we got fucking Dark Knight Rises. Great film. I just think there's just, you know, so many plot holes you can just run a truck through, but you know, I still enjoy it. But you know, giving credit where credit's due, Nolan is amazing and good storyteller. Did great with Batman. I mean, finally brought Batman back from the atrociousness of Joel Schumacher and Tim Burton. I never really liked it. I mean, you know, I watched it. I watched the 1989. I think it was 1989, the Tim Burton one. And I still thought it was kind of like, okay, this is Batman, but, you know, I don't know. I fucking, you know, Jack Nicholson, I don't know. You know, I look at him and I don't see the Joker. I just see Jack Nicholson being wacky and fucking chewing up the scenery and shit. Which, you know, you could do with a character like that. But with Jack Nicholson, just like with The Shining, it's like, you know, the second you see Jack Nicholson, you know he's going to do something fucking crazy. Or he just fucking looks crazy. So it's hard to kind of like, you know, I don't know. What Heath Ledger did was, you know, not only unassuming, but very like fucking, I didn't see Heath Ledger, man. I just fucking saw the Joker, man. I mean, that's, you know, that's what you want to do with the character. But anyway, why I'm talking about Batman and realistic. And so I was watching the Hit Girl stuff, and I was like, you know, so many directors that have handled Batman have gotten the Robin thing, you know, or try to steer away from the Robin. It's like, nah, Robin can never work in the big screen. There's just fucking, there's no way you would buy a fucking kid running around with this man, this fucking, because that would make Batman look like a psychopath. But you gotta understand, you know, anybody that knows the Batman mythos, I mean, Robin is a quintessential part of Bruce Wayne slash Batman's life. You know, from the original Robin that becomes Nightwing, which is Dick Grayson, and then Jason Todd, and then fucking Tim Drake, and up to Carrie Kelly, and there's just, you know, there's always a Robin, man. And when I was watching Hit Girl do all this stuff, it's like, that's how you do it, man. I mean, obviously, you know, Robin ain't gonna be fucking slicing throats and shooting fucking people in the head and shit. But I would love to see, like, you know, a fucking 12, 13-year-old kid just fucking by Batman's side and kicking ass, man. That'd be fucking badass. I think, you know, you could pull it off. And so that's what I was thinking, and I watched it, and I was like, yeah, you know, I love this movie. I had forgotten about it, actually. You know, I have a like an extensive Blu-ray collection, and I don't know, I just kind of over I glossed over the Kick-Ass movie, and it wasn't until like I heard about the sequel being made, and like with Jim Carrey and most of the cast, actually I think all the original cast is coming back, so I kind of popped it in and watched it with my kids. And I was looking at the Hit Girl shit. I was like, you can do Robin. You can sell this shit. You can do Robin. So, you know, that's my two cents on that thing. But yeah, it's a great movie. Check it out if you guys haven't checked it out. It's badass. And like I said, Nicolas Cage movies, like I said, you know, Face Off, Gone in 60 Seconds. I think he did really well as Big Daddy here in Kick-Ass. And like I said, I don't like Nicolas Cage. There's just something about his acting. Ghost Rider. I remember watching Ghost Rider, the first one. I went to the theater, and me and my wife, for the first time ever, at least for me, I can't speak for Sherry, but I've never fallen asleep in a theater while watching a movie, paid movie. You know, you pay your two bits, and you fucking go in there, and you pay to be entertained. And I actually fell asleep during that movie. I don't know, I'm just not a Cage fan, you know. But I gotta give him credit though. He did a really good job as Big Daddy. So I don't know, that movie for me fires on all cylinders. It's funny, it's action packed, and I don't know, it was tongue in cheek, and it was an interesting movie. Set in a world where it's fantastical, and yet you kind of buy it, and I don't know, it's just love it, love it, just love it. Especially like I said, the stuff with the Hit Girl, I totally bought it. You know, I totally bought it. I bet you. So you do Robin, someone fucking do Robin. You're gonna reboot the franchise, you know, take Arkham City, check out Injustice or Arkham Asylum video games, and fucking check that shit out. Check out the new Dark Knight Returns movies, the animated movies, and you know, take all that source material and fucking slap it up on the screen. You know, just don't do a Schumacher and fucking take it literally. Like, comic books, it has to be kind of comic-y and bright colors and shit. No, you know, approach it with a sense of realism, but at the same time, you know, it's Batman. You gotta kind of, you know, do a little bit of the fantastical, because of and the other thing I didn't like is that, you know, like Nolan was very adamant that, you know, his Batman would never interact or be in the same world as Superman or Green Lantern or anything like that. That's another thing that kind of bugged me about the Nolan versus Batman, which, like I said, there's so much good that you forgive, like all that other shit, but you know, for quintessential Batman fans, it's like there is, I mean, you have to have this world where, you know, Batman and Superman and the Justice League, it's all important. It's like the fucking Avengers movie. I mean, it was bound to happen. All these characters have to cross paths. And when they did, I mean, look at the money the fucking movie made. And look at, I mean, you know, it's one of them big blockbuster popcorn movies, but man, was I fucking, you know, I'm not a big Marvel fan, but I was fucking smiling ear to ear. You know, you watch fucking Iron Man and Thor and Hulk and all these characters that you saw in these separate movies and fucking bashed together, and it works. So to have someone say, it's like, nah, Batman is never fucking be with Superman, and, you know, he's, I want to ground him. It's such reality that there would be no possible way that can happen, because Superman's too fantastical, and there, or, you know, Wonder Woman, or there's no such thing as a Flash. And, but, you know, I think that you do have to ground movies in reality. And I don't know. I just say, take a look at what Marvel's doing. And I'm not saying copy that, but I think that's what needs to happen in order to, you know, I'm very excited for the Man of Steel. I think that's where we might get a little bit of that reality and fantastical mixed together. And I think it'll work. But those are my two cents on that thing. Robin, throw in Robin, man. My favorite Robin's Tim Drake. A lot of people like Dick Grayson, the original one. I like Dick Grayson too. But I like him better as Nightwing, you know, when he took on the name from, what was it? It was Nightwing and Bird Flame. Flame? I forgot. It was the two names from Heroes of the City of Kandor, the bottled city of Kandor. So he was paying tribute to Superman. And he took the fucking, you know, he was. Dick Grayson was like a Superman fan, so he, to honor Superman, took on the name Nightwing, which is a Kryptonian name. Anyway, go ahead and Google that shit. But yeah, like, I think Robin is essential to Batman's world, and especially if you've ever read the Death in the Family storyline where Jason Todd gets, spoilers, fucking shit, gets like killed by the Joker and shit. I mean, you know, how it affects Batman, and yeah, it's the dynamic. I don't know. I plus the villains, man. I think the biggest problem with the Nolan stuff is you had someone like the Joker, which worked, but you had to go Bane, and then with Bane, he was really good. He was like, okay, I buy this guy, but at the same time, in the back of my head, I was kind of missing the Venom, you know, where he slaps his chest and he just fucking gets all road rage. And I think you could have kind of grounded that in reality. You had some sort of tubing or some sort of Venom, you know, not too over the top, but just enough where it's like, okay, this guy's like working on some special sauce that, you know, I think he could have been done. But, you know, instead he's got this gas mask and, you know, I don't know. It's just, kind of missed that the Venom in Bane, but once again, the problem with the Nolan stuff is that you have to choose. You couldn't go with like Clayface or other characters. Like, I don't even think he would have done the Penguin or something like that. Which, you know, I don't like the Penguin very much. Whack whack whack, you know, shit like that. But the Riddler would have been interesting to see. I think that would have been interesting to see. But I think that had they done the Riddler, I think for some reason I have a feeling that it would have leaned a lot towards the Joker character. But I think that, like I said, I think the problem with Rises was that, you know, The Dark Knight was just so good. It was such a fucking good movie. That, you know, how to top that. I mean, yeah, you want to make a big spectacle, and it's, but I think there was too many things going on, and I think that, you know, on multiple views that I've seen it, I think that the stuff that it became less about Batman, to an extent where it started in like when I watch Batman Begins, it's all about Bruce Wayne, and I'm heavily invested. Even Ducard or Ra's al Ghul and shit, like, you know, Liam Neeson plays him really well, and you know, he's up and center pretty much in the beginning of the movie. But you know, my whole focus was on Bale and the way he played it, and I wasn't just invested in Christian Bale but in Dark Knight, you know, obviously Heath Ledger, man, stole the fucking show. And that's fine, you know, I was still kind of invested in Christian Bale, but you know, you for some reason with that movie, I just kept wanting to see fucking Joker, like Joker this, Joker that. And same thing kind of happened in Rises, even much more so, where like Bane is front center, like you're mostly invested in Bane a lot, and Selina Kyle, Anne Hathaway, I think, stole the show as Catwoman. I think she did a great job of fucking Catwoman, you know, walking that line. So yeah, it became less about Batman, and yeah, by the time Dark Knight Rises ends, you know, I really like, even when he's carrying, you know, fucking spoilers if you haven't seen it, but like even when he's carrying like the bomb, the nuclear bomb, like out to sea, and you know, he's gonna die and shit for the city and whatnot. Like I, you know, I'm not invested emotionally in his like passing, because something was lost in track. It became more about the villains and other stuff, and like Bruce Wayne, he's all, like I said, Batman became kind of like took a back seat to the people that were supposed to be secondary characters, but that's just my opinion. But like I said, you know, all that said and done, it was a fucking, you know, very entertaining movie, despite, you know, the fucking huge ass plot holes, like fucking, you know, I throw you in the pit here in fucking middle of nowhere, but you have cable TV, direct TV to your left, watch what I do. You know, that, and like fucking gets out of the pit, middle of nowhere, but fuck it, you know, I'll get, you know, I got no money, Alfred's gone, but somehow I'll make it back to Gotham in time to fucking save Gotham from blowing up or some shit. I don't know, stuff like that, you know, stuff that did, I don't know, I could keep talking about different stuff that bugged me about Dark Knight Rises, but one of the things that I hear a lot of complaints about is Bane's voice. But I think that it was really genius to see such a hulking person, such a big guy, and you know, before he even utters a word, you expect a certain voice. And then I think because the voice sounded very posh and almost Sean Connery, Britishly weak, it's more intimidating, I think, if you take a look at it, you know, if you, you know, kind of look at it in those, my perspective, you know, it's very unassuming, so it makes it creepier, and I think it's a good choice, because you don't expect that kind of voice to come out of such a guy. You know, it could be a little bit comical, but if you really look at it, it was a great vocal choice. I think it was Tom Hardy did a great job as Bane. I liked it a lot. Like I said, you know, I can poke holes through a bunch of movies. No movie is perfect. Like I said, Christopher Nolan's fucking legendary when it comes to movie making and shit, you know. But I think Rises, I think on multiple reviews, kind of falls a little bit flat. I mean, you compare it to, like I said, I really love Batman Begins. Like, that's a movie that I can go back to, and it's just so earnest, so like straightforward, and I don't know, there was something about that fucking movie that just, like I said, it was so grounded in reality that you fucking bought this guy running around and fucking in a fucking cape and shit, and I don't know, it was there's something about it, I can't put my finger on it, but Batman Begins was just, you know, it was great. It didn't feel anything like the Tim Burton stuff. It felt really good. And then you take it to The Dark Knight, and then you throw in Heath Ledger and the bigger scope, you know, you shoot like the opening scene in 70mm and fucking, you know, it was just great. Great performances all around, except for Maggie Gyllenhaal. I, you know, wasn't a big fan of Maggie Gyllenhaal, and I think once again, I think to do too many villains in it kind of falls. If I think Two-Face didn't get his day in the sun, and he wasn't really even Two-Face. He was just fucking angry Harvey. You know, he wasn't like, you know, in the comics where he's always two sides about something. He's like fucking talking to himself and shit, like, you know, what should we do, blah blah blah, this, and you know. But in Dark Knight, he was just fucking, my fucking face is burnt out, I'm just pissed off, I'll flip a coin and that's my nod, you know. The fucking character, the idiosyncrasies of that character, it would have been better to explore had it happened earlier in the movie, or had they maybe, I would have been pretty interested in seeing that character not die, but develop into a spillover into the third one. But that's just me. So, you know, all that aside, like I said, you know, Heath Ledger, man, every time I watch that performance, you know, you could argue that that some people love Jack Nicholson's, you know, Joker and other, but you know, when I think about the Joker, there's two Jokers, definitive Jokers, and the first one, when I read a comic or a book or anything, like, the voice I hear is Mark Hamill, quintessential voice. Hello, kiddies, Joker here, Uncle Joker, you know, that kind of voice. Sorry, I'm not Mark Hamill, so I can't do the perfect imitation, but you get the idea. And then Heath Ledger, man, he took it to another level, and when I watch his performance, like, I get so sucked in, and then I look at him and I'm studying him, and like, I fucking can't see Heath Ledger, like, because he just plays the fucking role so good. And I'm not talking about like because he's got makeup on. Even the makeup is very minimalistic, to the point where the performance is just so good. Every beat, every syllable and breath and word that he uttered, it's a shame the guy died, you know, because I think that, you know, actors like that are able to immerse themselves into a character and bring out the inner workings of psychopathy that way, and make it entertaining and really straightforward too. You didn't have to think too much about the Joker. He didn't make it like, hey, you know, I'm like really fucking, you know, complex. No, he's fucking like all about anarchy, and like, I just do shit, you know. That was basically the premise. Like, I'm fucking a criminal genius and unpredictable, and that's why I'm fucking so dangerous, because like, I'm so fucking unpredictable. Like, half the time, I don't even know what I'm gonna do. So that's why what makes, you know, the Joker such a formidable adversary for Batman. But yeah. Also, wanted to throw in the for you Disney fans, The Little Mermaid is coming out on Blu-ray. And I think it's coming out in 3D. I don't know if they're doing a 3D conversion like they did with The Lion King and Beauty and the Beast, but that'd be interesting to see. I think 3D like that works really well. Like, when I was watching Finding Nemo 3D, I think it works really well, especially in ocean stuff. You get kind of sucked in. So I think it would work pretty well. If you're a fan of 3D, I would definitely buy it. I'm a big fan of 3D. You know, I'm also the type of guy that likes fucking, you know, being poked in the eye, the 3D gags. So yeah, so that Monsters, Inc. 3D is coming out February 19th, so wanted to throw those out there. But yeah, I was watching Kick-Ass, and it kind of spiraled to the whole Robin thing, and then I popped in Dark Knight Rises, and, you know, skipping through a couple scenes, calibrating my television. Not my television, but my the audio. I was had some AV sync problems. Fuck. Pisses me off because you gotta, fix it in milliseconds. And then you gotta like watch people's voices, and then you gotta pop in like a calibration disc, make sure it's like hitting the milliseconds. And I don't know. Anyway, it's such a, pain in the ass to sometimes do AV sync. I wish the Oppo BDP 103 had a AV sync millisecond adjustment, but the current firmware doesn't have it, which I was kind of disappointed because the Sony Blu-ray player I was using had an AV sync option in the Blu-ray player, which did milliseconds in 1 millisecond, 2 millisecond, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I think, or it would be like 2, 4, 6, 8. I think it was those numbers. But the AV receiver that I have does it in like 20. It'll start at 0 milliseconds, 10 milliseconds, 20 milliseconds, 40 milliseconds. So it's a little bit harder to nail in those terms, but I was able to nail it. Other than that, but yeah, I was watching Rises, and like I said, I watched Kick-Ass, and I was like, wow, felt I should share that with you guys here at IKP's Digital Film Podcast, where, like I said, we talk everything and anything about digital film. Excited, very excited. I've been rewatching. I don't know if you guys saw there was during the Super Bowl. There, I didn't watch the Super Bowl. I'm not a football fan, but there was a mini trailer for, excuse me, for a couple of the movies like Iron Man and Fast and Furious 6 and stuff like that. But the Iron Man trailer, you watched the trailer, and then told you to go to Facebook to watch to get an extended look. Now it's up on Apple Trailers, like the extended look and whatnot. But the extended look is so funny. It's just fucking Robert Downey Jr. He comes into frame, and actually, I don't even want to. If you haven't seen the extended look Super Bowl trailer, go to Apple Trailers and check it out. It's just labeled extended look, and check it out. You'll laugh at the first couple of seconds of the trailer, but I'm watching it and I'm like, man, dude, this looks fucking badass. 'Cause I was a little disappointed in Iron Man 2. It was kind of, it felt a little bit flat. I mean, I like Iron Man, I love Downey, man. I mean, he's a great actor. But I think Iron Man 2 was okay. It's rewatchable, but not as rewatchable to me as Iron Man 1 or his performance in the Avengers. But I think that this one, is kind of taking it back to the first one, and a mixture of that in the Avengers iteration, and I really am really excited to see it. And Fast and Furious 6, man, seriously, like a lot of people say, getting into the Fast and Furious franchise, okay, these are movies that you have to kind of turn off your brain, or if you're a car nut like my wife is, and like I don't know shit about cars really. I just know, I just want something that goes vroom. But I could appreciate, a good looking car and something that goes fast and has power, and the people that dedicate their lives like I do to digital film stuff like calibration televisions, and how we as filmmakers or calibrators or whatever are really into our gadgets. I mean, there are people that are into their cars, and I respect that totally. And I get into this franchise, and like the first time I watched the first one, I was hesitant because Vin Diesel. I was like, Vin Diesel, I don't know if I can Vin Diesel. But I watched it, and I was just pleasantly surprised when I first watched it. Back when it was, I think when I watched it on DVD actually, and it had been out for a while, and my brother Jesse was like, watch it, it's fucking good. And I don't even think Sherry had watched it, and her being a car nut, she hadn't watched it. Because we had a preconceived notion about Vin Diesel. There was something about Vin Diesel that rubbed us the wrong way. I don't know. But obviously that changed. But we watched it, and it fucking snuck up on me. And it was fucking pretty entertaining. And Vin Diesel kind of, I like Vin Diesel, man. Fucking sold it for me, that character that he plays in the movie. Fucking, yeah, I like Paul Walker, you know. But it was good. It was what it was. It wasn't trying to be anything that it wasn't. It wasn't false advertising. You know, you saw the trailer, and the trailer kind of gave you, it was a straightforward story, and it was what it was. And the second one was okay. I think that it suffered a little bit. Not as rewatchable as the first one. But this is where my problem lies, is that Tokyo Drift, Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. Now, a lot of people thought it was like a departure, like, okay, now we're like exiting these characters. But the thing I love about a lot of people don't like Tokyo Drift. I can't understand why, because it spawned two great things in the Fast and Furious franchise. One is Justin Lin, the director that took on from there on Fast and Furious, Fast Five, and the sixth installment now. And not only that, but a beloved character that people love, have, I mean, to the point where they literally did prequels to make sure that he's involved, because I love the character too, was Han. Sung Kang is Han. And but if you go back and watch Tokyo Drift, everything from that you watch from there on out, like the Fast Five, Fast Six, Fast and Furious, those three movies are literally more ways than one linked to Tokyo Drift. And I really hope that if the sixth one is the last one, I hope they do some sort of closure. And if they do a seventh one, which would be like, I don't, if they do a seventh one, I would love to see it in Tokyo, either after the death of Han, spoilers, fucking, if you haven't seen it, fuck it, spoilers, or Han's journey to Tokyo, and his building of his crew there, and before that, the kid gets there, or what happened after Han's death, and Vin Diesel, did he hook up with this kid? Did they pull another? I would love to see kind of like that, one of those two things. But it had to be based in Tokyo. I hope that the sixth one, if it is the last one, they kind of rounded out to Tokyo. But the only problem is that when I watch Tokyo Drift now, as entertained as I am with it, I think that the character of Han was sold a little short, because he's so upplayed in this in the other movies, where he's just so calm, collected, and good at what he does, and he's with this crew and doing these amazing badass things. But by the time you watch Tokyo Drift, all these things had happened already, and he seems to, he's still calm and cool and whatnot. But you would think that, yeah, I never thought once. Now I wouldn't. I think that him dying the way he did, I think that it would have been harder to get the better of Han, in terms, especially in terms of driving and whatnot, But so I think it was kind of a mistake killing him off. But who knows? Maybe, it's the movies. You can bring anybody back. So. But yeah, I mean, take a look at, Justin Lin's a great director, and I think I like the way he turned the franchise around. He started stripping away the flash of the cars, and more about a story, and the functionality of the cars. And I don't know, it's just Fast Five. I really enjoyed that. I watched it the other day, and I was just like, you could. It was fun. It's a fun fucking movie, man. I mean, if you like cars, explosions, and kind of heist movies, I mean, you'll enjoy these movies. Take a look at them. So I'm excited about the sixth one. Definitely Iron Man 3. Man of Steel, definitely. I want to see a trailer. I want to see like a trailer, a really good trailer, like that explains what the movie's about, and just give me any more footage of Superman would be great, dude. I mean, come on, I'm a big Superman fan, so. But as much as a Superman fan as I am, I'm a big Flash fan. My favorite Flash character is Bart Allen, and which was known as Impulse, which I took the nickname, and then Impulse Kitty. Kitty is I call Kitty is Sherry's nickname. Call her Kitty a lot sometimes. Well, I used to more in the past. So we took these nicknames that we liked and kind of smashed them together. So we came up with Impulse Kitty Productions. In case you were wondering where that came from, where the fuck you came from, Impulse Kitty, what is that? So it's just nicknames that we kind of like, all right, let's smash them together. But yeah, I would love to see a Flash movie, man. That'd be great. So, but I'm kind of jazzed about the Justice League movie, so I'll finally be able to see all these characters. Hopefully they're able to pull it off. Now, I'm going to end it with J.J. Abrams doing Star Wars. I think it's genius. I think he breathed new life into Star Trek. Some Trekkers disagree. But I think that Abrams was able to take something that was more or less, say, cult phenomenon, and broaden the audience and bring in more people. I don't know. I watched Star Trek, and I can't wait to watch Into Darkness, and definitely excited about that he's directing Star Wars. I wonder how he's gonna breathe life into that, because after the raping of the prequels that Lucas did, unfortunately. Then again, as I got older, I look back and I'm thinking to myself, it's like, man, it's harder for me to watch Star Wars movies, because you start really like looking at them, and I think the reality of the situation is that if you look at all the Star Wars movies, they're actually just they're made for kids. They're kid movies at the heart of them, if you really look at them. And I think that Lucas was in terms of making the prequels, I think a lot of people, I don't know why they were like that. It's like what you saw and what you fell in love with Star Wars, the original trilogy, is when you were a child, and I think he went back and he did them, and he did them as family movies, and I think that's what the translation kind of got lost. I mean, at least that's what I think. Because I look at them, and they're literally kids' movies. It's some action and shit. But definitely a lot of compelling characters. I really want to see what happens with Skywalker and Han and Leia, and I don't know. I really am curious to see what they're going to do with this, especially with J.J. Abrams, such a great director, and food for thought. So thanks for stopping by for another IKP podcast, digital film podcast, and I hope you guys stop by again for another podcast. So take it easy, and bye. Take it easy, guys.